Hello everybody, I am Lucia Matuonto and welcome to the Relatable Voice podcast, a talk show where my guests and I talk about relatable everyday situations, books, and the environment we live in. Remember to subscribe and follow the podcast on social media so you can be notified when a new episode is available. Let's begin. Hello and welcome to the Relatable Voice podcast. Today, we are thrilled to have Patrick Greenwood on the show. We are driving to Irvine, California to speak with him and to learn more about his endeavors. So Patrick is a writer, cybersecurity blogger, and his latest book, Shores of Okinawa, has just been published. So welcome, Patrick, to the RV.
Thank you for having me on the RV, Lucia.
My pleasure. I'm so excited to talk with you because I love talking with authors, of course, and with podcasters. And also, I love California, although yes. I've never been in
A lot of rain. We're getting a lot of rain, but it is beautiful here, absolutely.
Is the temperature fine now for this time of the year?
Yeah, 79 degrees pretty much year-round. It does get cold a little bit, but mostly it's around 79 degrees, yes.
The perfect temperature.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I know coffee holds a special place in your heart.
Yes, it does.
It's no secret that most writers have a deep love for a good cup of coffee. If you had the opportunity to travel to any country solely for its unique coffee culture, where would you choose to go and why?
Ooh, well, I've been to Vietnam. My first book, which was Sunrise in Saigon, was written when I was in Vietnam in 2012. Vietnam is the number two exporter of coffee in the world next to Brazil. So when people talk about, you know, going on a coffee venture or a coffee hit, Vietnam is like number one on my list. Because again, it's the uniqueness of the coffee and the beans. It's also the coffee shops are designed with kind of a French flavor to it. Portugal is another one. Cassius, Portugal is one of my favorite cities of the world. I love the coffee there. And of course, where you are, Madrid, Spain. Cannot forget Spain is excellent coffee as well. And I think those are the top three. So Vietnam, Portugal, and Spain are my three favorite coffee places in the world.
Mm-hmm. I've never been to Vietnam. But I have to tell you, my favorite coffees are Brazilian coffees, as you told us. Colombian are good as well. But you know, you would not believe, personally, I have a weakness for Italian coffee, which is not actually made in Italy. They are from Brazil.
I know, it's true. It is Italian coffee, it's not made in Italy. It's true.
Yeah, but they are delicious. So, Patrick, can you share with us more about the global causes that your coffee brand supports, such as Helmet for Kids in Vietnam? Is that correct?
Yes. So I have two. So my first book, which was Sunrise in Saigon, I always name a benefactor to every book that I write. And I decided to partner with basically an organization called Helmets for Kids in Vietnam. It was co-founded by President Bill Clinton in 2000 when he made his first visit there. And that was when the organization first started the idea of making helmets for children, which is actually kind of over my shoulder. That's actually one of them. And in 2019, Academy Award winner Michelle Yeoh became the global ambassador for Helmets for Kids as well. And I started partnering with them around 2022 when the book was released. And all proceeds of the book, and along with all coffee sales of Sunrise and Saigon coffee, of course, mug sales and hoodie sales, all the clothing and apparel, all goes to donations to help provide helmets for children. Last year, we provided close to about 400 helmets for kids in Vietnam. So I was really happy to see the kids wear the helmets and see my logo on the helmet and everything like that as well. For the next book, which is, as you mentioned, Shores of Okinawa, which is actually, my apologies, it is actually due out Memorial Day weekend, 2024. That has a separate donor and it's actually called Help Oki. So it's a nonprofit organization in Okinawa, Japan, that is focusing on trying to make a difference in helping reduce poverty in Okinawa. They're also going to be the benefactor of the proceeds of Shores of Okinawa Coffee, Shores of Okinawa Book, and of course, anything merchandise related to Shores of Okinawa as well. So every book that I write, including the next one I'm working on next year, which is called Scent of the Lotus, that will also have a benefactor as well. So my books really are more of what I love to do. But for me, it's also a way of helping raise money for global causes as well.
Oh, that's so beautiful, Patrick. I had goosebumps. Yes, just to see.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, that you could get 400 helmets for kids. And what makes these causes so important to you?
Well, when I was in Vietnam in 2012, I originally went for a cycling event. I'm a global cyclist as well, so I've cycled in different countries. I was in Vietnam to go cycling, and I was in one of the outlying districts in Ho Chi Minh City, one of the kind of far districts, kind of in the poor areas. And I saw a lot of children that were on bikes, and they're having to contend with 8 million scooters and cars on the roads. And a lot of these kids were getting sideswiped or getting knocked, you know, into the, you know, different places. None of them had helmets. And that was when I really started digging into helmets for kids, going, there has to be some program here that's funding it. And that's when I stumbled upon Helmets for Kids for Vietnam. So I witnessed firsthand children that were cycling that, you know, either got knocked over or they got, you know, pushed aside or whatever, and they just tumbled. And, you know, to see that, it's like, wait a minute, why are they not wearing a helmet? And so that's what kind of motivated me to get behind that particular cause. In Okinawa, when I wrote Shores of Okinawa, I was stationed there as a Marine in the 1980s. So I remember vividly, you know, the poverty in the island. It is one of the poorer parts of Japan. And to come across helpoki.org as a charity to sort of help reduce poverty in Okinawa, really took to my heart. So that's why I've named them as well. But every benefactor I have, I want to have this personal connection with. So in the next book, I'm sure I'll find a charity that I'll work with that I can, you know, relate to. But both of them are from personal experience. I got to witness the kids with the helmets and obviously, you know, the poverty in Okinawa as well. But that's why I wanted to partner with them in order to give them the proceeds.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for doing this. I can imagine seeing kids without helmets like on the streets.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we have it here in California. Kids are riding their electric bikes now, and a lot of them do not have helmets. And I kind of look at them and go like this, signaling to them, and they just kind of wave me off. And I wish they do have a helmet law. I think they will eventually have a helmet law in the United States that any 16-year-old riding an electric bike needs to have a helmet. Some do. Some have a helmet, but they have their cell phones while they're riding doing this. It's like, oh, please.
Exactly. That's the problem.
Yes. Yes.
Patrick, let's talk about your writing career. I'm curious to know when you first realized that you wanted to become a writer.
Well, as you mentioned in the pre-call, I had been dyslexic my whole life since I was a kid. So writing was not something that was really high on the list of people around me. They said, there's no way you can write. You can't even read. You can't do any of these things. But I've always wanted to write. I always saw it as a challenge to say, God, if one day I ever became a writer. But because of battling dyslexia for so many years, you know, and not having kind of the support system of how to cope with it, it wasn't until I got into my adult life when I started finding ways to write better, read better, you know, be able to retain words better and things. So I learned different ways of going through that. It wasn't until 2022, actually, when I retired from the technology space. I was a cybersecurity specialist for many years. And I just said, I just don't want to do that anymore. I'm finally going to become a writer full time. So I started writing blogs for technology companies as sort of like a side project. Eventually it became, you know, the career writing that I'm doing today. But I also had this manuscript sitting in the drawer called Sunrise in Saigon that I started writing 2013, 2014, kind of put it aside for a couple of years, took it out again. And finally, in around 2021, 2022, it's got to come out. This has got to get published. So that's when I really wanted to bring the book out. But the creating blogs for clients with dyslexia and still being relevant to them even 2 years later, it's been a dream come true for me. I write for 7 clients today, a wide variety of subjects from artificial intelligence all the way up to blockchain to cryptocurrency to email security. But for me to produce a blog that is published is a great milestone. And I run into writers all the time that come on my podcast that are dyslexic or ADHD or whatever. And they never let that hold them back. They, like you, it didn't hold you back from being the success that you are today, Lucia. And I'm not only very proud of you, but I'm proud of all the writers in our community that have overcome, you know, obstacles. And dyslexia was always my obstacle. But every day I publish a blog, it's a ladder up. It's a ladder up on life. When my next book comes out, it's another ladder of life I'm climbing. But I've always wanted to write, but by listening to the noise, people tell me, no, you shouldn't, no, you shouldn't. When you eventually stop listening to that is when you feel like you've overcome.
Yeah, actually, I've heard of some writers who rely on voice recordings to avoid having to write all the time. Is this something you also do, or?
I literally write it out. I'll proofread it 4 or 5 times. I don't use artificial intelligence. I don't use ChatGPT to write. I write original content, which is really in our day and age in our industry. A lot of people have turned to ChatGPT to write for them, but that's not original content. So I write all original. Now, truth be told, I will probably edit the document 4 times in order to make sure that I get it right. I put it through spell check and grammar check and everything else. But I still, at the end of the day, when I produce the document, it is a great read. It makes sense. It's got all the technical knowledge they have in my head. But I've had to overcome spelling, structure problems, you know, the sentence structures not being correct, paragraphs not aligned. But I've overcome all of that. And I love the fact that when someone says, I want you to write a blog about the board of directors of a new corporation. Wow. Okay. I got this. And I love to inspire other writers to say, don't let any of your hangups block you. Never. You know.
Yeah, this is very inspiring. And about your book, Patrick, Shores of Okinawa. Am I speaking?
Absolutely. Beautifully. Beautifully.
Thank you. Is the second installment in the Jack Kendall series?
Yes. Yes.
So,
if you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
What inspired the plot of this novel? I know you worked with cyber security, and I was reading about this book, and it's like you delve into cyber terrorism.
Yeah, so great question. So the Jack Kendall series started with Sunrise in Saigon, which is kind of a romantic thriller that I wrote. A lot of people that have read it have said, is this an autobiography? I'm like, no, that wasn't me boring. But there's some elements of fiction and nonfiction in my first book. But it does tail end at the end of the book and brings up a terrible adversary called Travis Jones, who is a global terrorist that has this plot in order to try to assist China in hacking Taiwan. And that's how Sunrise in Saigon ended. It was sort of this lead in. So Shores of Okinawa picks up where Jack is now, you know, moving on to his life. However, behind the scenes, this terrible adversary is working in secret with the Chinese government to say, look, I may have a way to hack Taiwan and you guys will never take the blame for it. And I've got this hacker group in Vietnam. I've got these terrorist guys up here in Taiwan. I've got these people in Japan. And it really takes the theme of how countries really hack each other. So we talk about, are we at war with China? Are we at war with Taiwan? Well, let me tell you, we've been at war with Russia for years. It's all been cyber, yeah. Right? Not the bullets and the rockets flying, but it's the cyber hacking that's been going on for years. So the book picks up on the narrative of China's trying to find a way to overtake Taiwan, but why not try to do it through cybersecurity instead of doing it through bombs? And Travis Jones got this master plan. It's called Operation Dragon Bolt. And this idea of stealing all this information from Taiwan under their noses. Jack Kendall comes to the rescue along with Forrest Adams and a few other characters that have been introduced to find a way to stop it. And they had to lean on another criminal organization, the Yakuza in Japan, to say, hey, we need your hackers. And so in that book, I introduced this idea where criminal organizations also have a hacker team. And so does the Triads, and so does the Colombians. And so it brings to light this, everybody knows about the criminal organizations of the world, like the Mafia and the others, but they don't realize that they also have hackers too. And so they loan them out. They lease them. They rent them out. And Jack goes, we may need to get some really bad guys to go after some really terrible guys. So the story picks up on that whole transnational, you know, cyber terrorism and country against country and the secrecy of war that goes on between the cyber hackers and so on. And where sometimes hackers have a loyalty to say, yeah, maybe we'll help them. Right. And so it kind of picks up along that line. But it has a powerful ending, wonderful ending. But it also leads into the next book in the Jack Kindle series, which is called The Scent of the Lotus, which will come out next year. But for people that love cyber terrorism, they love to understand cybersecurity, they want to understand hacking. A lot of the people that read the early PDF of it have said, okay, how much of this is true? You were in cyber for 28 years. I'm like,
I was going to ask this.
Not going to say. No. No disclosures. But when people do read it, they do come back and say, okay, please tell me, was this real? I don't know. Maybe, you know, but you have to wait. You have to read the book to find out.
So it's kind of that your book blends fiction with real world events.
Yes.
So, Patrick, how do you strike a balance between authenticity and creative storytelling when incorporating this element into your narrative?
Beautiful question, Lucia. Beautiful question. I was always deeply inspired by the author Tom Clancy. When he wrote The Hunt for Red October, and when you watch that movie and see Alec Baldwin and Sean Connery in that movie, and you're going, did this really happen? Well, if you see the beginning of the movie, Tom Clancy puts this little blurb up on the screen saying, you know, in 1995, a Soviet submarine got lost off the coast of Nova Scotia, or did it really happen? Right. And so he's taking this possible real world possibility and making a fictional story out of it. But yet he used real submarines, real ships, real Navy, Russian captains. And you're just shaking your head going, did this really happen? I wanted to have that same effect when I wrote Sunrise in Saigon. I wanted people to walk away going, dude, 50-50, 70-30, 80-20, you know. And I just smile and say, it's up to the reader to figure that out.
Yeah.
And but I loved how Clancy did that. I know that, you know, James Patterson does that as well. Danielle Steele did that when she did Message from Nam. When you read these books, you're going, it's like the story isn't being done in a historical backdrop of the fall of Saigon or a Soviet submarine sinking in the Atlantic. That probably did happen. So he's taking something that probably did happen and made it into a fictional storytelling, right? And he does it brilliantly. So I'm inspired by that. So when you read Shores of Okinawa, you're going to read these things like Japanese Yakuza, Triads. Oh my God, they hate each other. They hate each other, but at the same time, they also partner with each other. So, and that could be a fiction, nonfiction piece of it. So the nice thing is it leaves it up to the reader to read the book and go through and say, whoa, if this half of this is true, man, I'm scared to death. It's like, well,
yeah, there are so many things that we have no idea.
Exactly. And that's where I wanted to add a little fiction, nonfiction blend to it for sure.
Sounds amazing, Patrick. I have a question about cybersecurity for you. Mm-hmm. What are some emerging trends or challenges that you foresee in the field of cybersecurity? Mm-hmm. And how do you believe they will impact the future of digital security measures? For example, nowadays with AI, I saw an interview and I thought it was a real person talking,
yes.
Actually,
yes.
With Trump. But anyway, yes. So how do you believe these things will impact the future of digital security measures?
So what you're referring to is deep fake. And deep fake is by far if I had to highlight, and I wrote this actually in several blogs for my clients, 2024 is the year of deep fake. Everything relating to the US elections, to the European elections, to the Olympics in Paris coming out, the Taylor Swift concert in Japan, Everything you can possibly imagine, there is an element of, is this real? Is this the person? Is that Donald Trump's voice? Is that President Biden's voice? Is that President Barack Obama's voice? You just don't know. And in one piece I wrote recently about this, I wrote it as a bottom piece or the excerpt of the ending of the blog that said, who is ultimately responsible for validating deep fake? Is it CNN? Is it Fox News? Is it Sky News? Mm-hmm. Who's responsible? And it ultimately is going to come down to them deciding on what content they're going to put across social media like Facebook and Twitter, right? What responsibility do they have to validate content before content is even put out there? And I think this year, when people see deep fake, like Donald Trump coming on to a news program, and it's not him, it's a picture, but a different body, a different voice, and he says, I'm dropping out of the election, that has rippling effects on who do we trust? So you can associate the biggest hacks of 2024 with basically an attack on people's trust. I don't trust Amazon anymore because I got a fake shipping label. I don't trust eBay because I never did a bid on that particular thing. My bank just sent me a bank statement. I don't have a bank account there. These are all frauds that are happening right now. So we are going to see AI completely become everywhere and everywhere, but it's already starting to make money for the criminals while corporate industry is still trying to find a way to harness its capabilities. So they're spending billions trying to figure out AI, where the criminals have already started making billions on AI. So it literally just took off with no guardrails, no idea of what we want it to be. And it could very well burn out. It could burn out before we even see the true value of it, or it becomes such a horrible criminal tool that it's going to get outlawed and banned as well. So it is definitely, but deepfake, to your question, deepfake is going to be the biggest thing this year for sure.
And I think about the banks as well.
Yes.
Imagine you lose your bank account.
That's correct.
So we need to read your book also to find out what yes, real there. Or is not.
Yes. A lot of the stuff in the book, when people read it, well, I wrote it in a way in which is not too high tech. Mm. And I did that intentionally because I wanted everyone to enjoy the read. It has not as much romance as the first one did. This one really gets to the heart of the theme, the cybersecurity, cyberterrorism piece to it. But it shows a lot of camaraderie, even among bad people. It shows camaraderie among them. It shows camaraderie among good people working together. It shows countries working together, mobilizing themselves. And I think today we need more books that really bring that people do get along, that people do have a way of collaborating, that people can set aside their political differences to say, you know, for the good of whatever, we're going to do this. And that's kind of the underlying theme of the book as well, is that it does have kind of that people working together regardless of their backgrounds. So it has a very diverse theme as well, which I'm very proud of.
Mm-hmm. Great. And Patrick, as a fellow podcaster, can you tell us a little bit more about your show? What kind of guests you have there?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Lucy. You have an amazing show as well, by the way, and I'm honored to be on your show, being a fellow podcaster. Writers on Writers over Triple Espresso started about a year and a half ago. It was a platform that I created on YouTube, on other channels as well, to give writers the ability to come out and promote their work. I don't charge people for the show whatsoever. It's all free. But it was a way in which, when I was first getting into writing, I didn't know a lot of writers. Most of my background was cybersecurity. So for me to go out and meet writers, I created this forum where I now got to meet writers to come on the show. So I host on Wednesdays and Saturdays, 10 Pacific a.m. on West Coast time. And I got everybody from, you know, fiction writers, romantic writers, people that have written memoirs, a Korean international exchange student who did an amazing book on her first book that came out, Place to Take Root by Eugene Kim. And then Jim Flynn, wonderful golfer, great guy, lives in the Connecticut area. He writes some of the funniest novels, books on golf and everything. And then G.S. Jerry writes tremendous books on sort of his life and selling his home. All these writers I got a chance to not only meet virtually, but when I took up my book tour last year, I spent 7 months on the road. I got to meet a lot of these writers that I met through the podcast. I drove around like all around the country. I stopped in Oklahoma to see Amy Lee. You know, I went all the way into Florida to see a bunch of people, went up north to Connecticut to see Jim, hung around the DC area where my parents were. So I got to physically meet the people that I met through the podcast, and everyone was very wonderful, gracious, and it became really good friends. And they all mentioned that, hey, this was really a great way for me to market. So Writers on Writers over Triple Espresso, so really became an open form of civic. You got 30 minutes, promote your book. If not, I got a cover. The other thing I do too, to support our community, I buy everybody's book that comes on the podcast. So everyone's like, let me ship you a book. I said, don't bother. I got it. It's my way of supporting our community. So I purchase everybody's book and I always leave a review on Amazon and Goodreads for everybody that comes on the podcast. So it's sort of my contribution to our community. But since I've done it, I just broke 127 episodes as well. My goal is to obviously hit 200 by the end of the year. But it's great to meet people that are like, they're so proud of what they've done. They're so proud of the books they've created or the book series they've done. They always have smiles. It's like your show, very organic. You just sort of lay it out there and it's wonderful. But no, I'm very happy. It's a big accomplishment. But it most importantly, it does get writers like ourselves, a venue to say, here's what my book is all about. And here's how I'm marketing it. And I'm looking forward to writing my next book. And it's so wonderful to see their smiles too.
Yes, I agree with you. For me, interviewing authors and creatives is a wonderful experience.
It is.
It's so good. Like we learn so much with each other. At least I learn a lot from my guests. And I hope I can drive all around the world and interview authors like you, Patrick, forever.
Thank you. No, and you have a beautiful podcast, and it's my honor to be here today. But thank you for having me as well.
Likewise, Patrick. Looking ahead, you told us that you are going to publish the next book of the series. So what are your long-term aspirations as a writer, podcaster, and entrepreneur?
Well, let's start with the book. So the next book after Shores of Okinawa is called The Scent of the Lotus. It is really a predate book of the first book, Sunrise in Saigon. There was two characters in the first book, Forrest Adams, who was the CIA station chief in Vietnam, and then Miss Bui or Phuong Bui, who actually is the hotel manager of the hotel that Jack stayed in Saigon. And this next book, it talks about how they met, how Forrest and Bui met. And the backdrop was that Forrest was stationed in Vietnam at the end of the war in 1975, and he was a 17-year-old Marine. And Bui was a street orphan living in Saigon. And as the fall of Saigon happened around April 30th of 75, she attempted to try to jump over the fence to try to get into the U.S. Embassy. And Forrest, being a young Marine guard, tried to grab her and save her. And he got pulled back by his captain. She got pulled back by the crowd. And they made this eye contact of desperation to want to connect with each other. She falls to the ground. He falls to the ground. And a young priest, who was, by the way, featured in Sunrise in Saigon, Father Flanagan, picks her up and says, go to the cathedral, which is the Notre Dame Cathedral in Saigon. He turns to the Marine in the book and says, she'll be at the cathedral. So the whole story of Scent of the Lotus is his 30-year journey to try to get back to Vietnam to find Bui.
I need to read number one. Yeah, the first one to understand.
Yes, so there's a preamble to it, but it does take me back from here. I went pure cyber terrorism, technology, little romance. Now, Scent of the Lotus takes me back to my romantic genre a little bit.
Romance, always, at least a little bit.
I agree. But doing that in that one. But that's the 2000 now. The book will be released on April 30th of 2025, which is the 50th anniversary of the fall of Saigon. So my goal is, because the book centers around the fall of Saigon, I want the book to come out on the 50th anniversary of that. So that's going to be on the book side. The podcast, Writers on Writers, I hope goes on forever. I hope to hit 200 broadcasts this year. I'm excited. I'm having writers from all over the world coming on. I've had editors. They've had musicians. I've had publishers come on. So I just want to keep that going and keep doing some wonderful things. From a coffee perspective, every book's going to have a coffee. Every book's going to have a mug. And all proceeds are going to go to the benefactors of each book. So when I launch the Shores of Okinawa on Memorial Day weekend, I'm going to have a big coffee sale, a big book sale, you know, mug sale as well. And then again, proceeds will be going to help support, you know, Help Oki as well.
These are amazing plans for 2024. And would you like to leave a message for our listeners today?
Yes. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening on the podcast today. If you want to stay in contact with me and check out my books and everything else, cyclewriterllc.com is my main website. If you're interested in checking out the coffee and merchandise, it is PsychoWriter, the number 3, espresso.com is the coffee and merchandise site as well. And then shoresofokinawanovel.net is the actual book website, and along with the book trailer, movie trailer as well.
Are your books on Amazon Kindle as yes. well? We can also have the ebook, paperback. Yes.
Absolutely. So all the actually Sunrise in Saigon is on Audible. It's on Kindle. It's on hardback, paperback. And when Shores of Okinawa releases on Memorial Day weekend, it'll be released in paperback and Kindle first. And then the audiobook will probably be released around the August timeframe.
Patrick, you are such a wonderful guest. Super easy to speak, to talk. And I just want to tell you that I am going to read one of your books to start, number one. Thank you. Also, I would love to go back to California to interview you again and learn more about this new book.
Absolutely. I love when you come this way. I love to have you. We'd definitely like to do a live podcast. Maybe I'll have you on my podcast and we'll do a live broadcast. That would be pretty cool.
I will be super happy to have another conversation with you and the other side of the conversation. So Patrick, keep doing these amazing, amazing things you are doing.
Thank you, Lucia. Thank you for having me on your podcast. And it is an honor to be here. And you're a wonderful host and you're very easy. And I got to tell everybody, you got to come on your podcast. This is such a beautiful broadcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you'll be notified when the next one is posted. Please rate this podcast and share it with your friends. Thank you for listening, and remember, relationships don't exist. Relating does. Until next time.